This is On Location. I'm Tim Leitner. Today's episode comes to you on location from Austin, Texas, and Wichita, Kansas. But first, On Location is produced by the NCO Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Manlin and me. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcast, Breaker, and Radio Public, among others. So subscribe today on your favorite podcast service and tell all your friends. On today's episode, Latoya Southall, supervisor on the Texas Data Management Services Project for Maximus, hosts two caseworkers with the Department of Children and Family Services Project for Maximus, Jennifer Stinnett, case management counselor, and Chandra Lewis, child support counselor. They talk about setting up cases, establishing child support orders, and the judicial process in Sedgwick County. They discuss intergovernmental cases and the challenges that they present. Listen as they share about their roles and duties in the child support program and have a conversation about a day in the life of a child support caseworker. It's going to be a great show, so stick around and we'll be right back.
Welcome to the NCIA On Location podcast. I'm Latoya Southall, and I work for Maximus on our Texas Data Management Services project here in Austin, Texas. I've worked in the child support field in several roles for a little over 15 years. On this episode, I'm having a conversation with Jennifer Stinnett, a case management counselor, and Chandra Lewis, a child support counselor with our Kansas project. Jennifer, please introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about the project you two work on at Maximus, and then we'll pass it off to Chandra to introduce herself as well.
Yes, absolutely. Hello, I am Jennifer Stinnett, go by Jen. We are with the Kansas Child Support Services for the Department of Children and Family here in Wichita, Kansas, Sedgwick County. There is a lot that most people do not realize goes into child support services. It is not nearly as easy as even people thought who have a current child support issue, whether they be the custodial parent with the child or whether they are the non-custodial parent who has visitation rights, which we do not do visitation or custody. We are only for child support.
Yeah, I will say just from the previous conversations I had with you guys before recording this podcast, I learned quite a lot about what you guys actually do. And so we'll go ahead and let Chandra introduce herself next.
Okay. Hello, I am Chandra Lewis. I am a caseworker at the Kansas Department of DCF for Child Support Services. I work in establishment. I've been here almost a year. So it has been a major change from my past experience as an RN. So yeah, that's a little bit about myself.
All right. So thank you both for taking the time to talk with me today. And as I mentioned before, during our previous conversations in the past, we talked a lot about the processes for caseworkers, how a case moves through the system, starting with a referral and ending ultimately with enforcement. Chandra, before we dive deeper into the specifics of the process, can you tell us what a typical day looks like in your role as a caseworker?
Typical. I'm not sure if that's the key word, but for the most part, yeah. So our main thing right now is to get a lot of these cases, getting the petitions and getting the NCPs served. So usually my main day is I usually will just come in and always make me a little chart before I even leave work the previous day about what petitions that I need to start on. And I've been working a lot on the newer cases that's come in because they're fresh and that's easier because I know that the paperwork is most of the time all there. So then after I do the petition, then I send it to the attorney to get, you know, so the attorney can review. Then I file it with the court. And, you know, usually after the filing with the court, I get it back. I serve it with the MCP, with either the pro serve or the sheriff. And if they're incarcerated, you know, that's kind of an easy serve there. But, you know, every day honestly is different. Like yesterday was kind of a little bit of a hectic day where we had some CPs coming in, turning in paperwork, you know, because they was in non-co-op, meaning that for some reason they haven't turned in their paperwork. Like intake has been sending out, you know, hey, notices of, hey, you need to get this in so we can, you know, get your stuff, your paperwork and stuff going. So yesterday I had a CP come in and she wanted it lifted. Well, I can't lift that if, you know, the paperwork is not here. So, you know, they get a little upset thinking we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing and don't understand that, you know, just one case, it doesn't take just 10, 15 minutes to work a case. It can take a day. It can take hours. It depends on if we can locate the non-custodial parent, you know, so there's a lot of different things that come up during the day and we just never know. We can get phone calls from the call center, you know, with upset CPs or, you know, just wanting more of an update on their case. So every day is different, but usually that's my main goal is getting the petitions out, getting this NCP served and getting the ball rolling for the child support for the child.
So in order to, I guess, manage the difficult nature of that job where it's different every day, do you have certain days of the week where you do like petitions or do you kind of just take whatever is thrown at you, you know, day by day?
Well, me, I am a very, I have to have a routine, even though it in this field, it's going to get messed up at some point in time and I am okay with that. But I do have certain days, Monday, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, that I mainly work on petitions all day long. That's all I do. I mean, I barely check my email on them days, except for at the end of the day, I will check it. Just because I have to stay focused. This is what I'm doing. This needs to be done. And other days that, like the Thursday and Friday, I will work one or two petitions that I know possibly will not take me all day long. But other days, then I also do our on-base mail because we have mail coming in from like Topeka area. My callbacks, I have to do, you know, because we get voicemails from CPs or even NCPs at times, you know, or DCF. So I do all my callbacks. So there's a lot of little things that come with establishment and even sometimes employers, you know, get to verify employment or even call in Social Security office. I mean, there's so much.
Okay, so speaking about the processes, let's go through the four processes that we discussed in our previous conversations. So let's start with referral, and either one of you guys can kind of explain to us, if we're not familiar with that process, what is a referral and how does it get started?
Okay, well, a referral comes usually from DCF, and it's anybody that is like a custodial parent that has open programs such as medical, food stamps, child care, that they are needing state assistance help with. Anytime that there's no NCP or, you know, father or anything in that child's life, then we get the referral from DCF because there's an open program. Open program, you know, that's where the referral comes from.
And that's for foster care, even if the father lives in the home. We still have referrals come in if the father is in the children's lives because they have an open program of some kind. Food stamps, like she said, child care is one of them. Foster care is another one. Mm-hmm. So there's any type of state assistance, TANF, which is temporary assistance for needy families. Mm-hmm. We receive referrals, 2,500 referrals, like I want to say a day.
Almost a day.
Is what I was told. Mm-hmm. Just for Sedgwick County alone.
So I wanted to ask a question just for people like myself that isn't really familiar with the term. What does DCF mean?
DCF is the Department of Children and Families. So everybody has some type of social services.
That like,
is
a good like SRS.
Yes. Used to be Social and Rehabilitation mm-hmm. Services. They in here in Kansas, they kind of combined the children and the family part.
So now they have changed it from the Social Rehabilitation Services several years ago to the Department of Children and Family.
Mm-hmm. I got you. So once you've gotten the referral, how do you go about the establishment process, which is like locating the person? How do you go about that process?
So after the referral, like, well, we call it here referral intake, they process all the personal information onto what we call cases, and that is the state program that we work off of. How they do meet, they scan all the paperwork to what's called OnBase. They will email me and let me know, hey, this referral is ready for a petition. Okay, so that makes it real easy for me, you know, to get like some of the new cases going. So that's pretty much the process on that part, establishment. Then, you know, I have to look through all the paperwork and, you know, just hunt for the NCP if there is no information on him. We use a system called TLO, several different ones out there as well, that help you locate their last known address. Even if the CP says she does not know who the kid's father is, I do what's called a paternity interview, where I schedule an interview. They come into the office and we ask them. We pretty much investigate. We find out. There's programs out there that they may only know of the town, the first name of him, maybe even just the last name. There's ways for us to locate him. It's hard, but I've located several with just by the first name and maybe a small town that he lived in.
Mm-hmm. So you said you do a paternity interview, and I know you guys do paternity tests if it's required. What does the interview entail?
We just pretty much ask, you know, the basic questions. Do you even know his name? Do you know his last name? Do you know who his parents are? Possibly where he works, where he was born? Does he have a social media? You know, I mean, basic questions like that. Does he have any friends? Where did he hang out? Where does he go to church? Does he hang out at a bar? Does he pump gas at this location? I mean, you can ask them whatever you can puzzle together and try to make something of.
I got you.
After we get them served first, then they have 30 days to answer after we serve the petition. So if within that 30 days, they have to request a genetic testing, and there's an answer sheet that they fill out. It's filed with the court and we look at it and they can say, yes, I don't think I'm the father. I think I want genetic testing done. Or they may say, I think so-and-so is the father. He's my friend. So then you have to do an order for genetic testing, file that with the courts.
Well, and also if this makes it easier, Latoya, also like when I create the petitions, if the CP, the custodial parent, does not know for sure if the name that she's given that could be the possible father, we can do a parentage determination of a petition. So we create one for paternity and we create one just for establishment of child support. Establishment of child support petition is if they know who the father is, if they've signed the birth certificate. So there's two different ones plus multiple ones if there's two or three kids as dads possibly on there. So there's mainly just two, paternity one and determine establishment. And that's if they've signed the birth certificate.
Okay. So with the petition, you follow with it an attorney and then you follow with their court. What happens after that?
Okay, so I send it for review to the attorney, just pretty much just so they can review, hey, this is going to be my case. And they sign it, they send it back to me, and I file it with Sedgwick County Courthouse. And so once it's filed and it actually gets a court number, then I go put it in the system that, hey, this is the new court case number. Then I send it out for service. Service is having the NCP served with the answer sheet, and that's what Jim was talking about. Like they get 30 days to return the answer form or whatever to us stating, yes, I'm for this percentage of child support that you have determined. And then it's set on the docket after they're served and they answer. Then it's set for hearing.
And so question, do you guys already have a predetermined amount when you petition the court?
Yes. Yes. So I do what's called, they create a worksheet, and I have to take the different wages from the NCP and the CP. And it's all divided by pretty much how old the child is with a percentage. If the NCP or even the CP does not work, we still have to enter an amount of wages in there. And we it's usually by minimum wage. And the minimum wage in Kansas as a whole for monthly is $1,257. So if they do not have a job and we cannot find any kind of wages anywhere in any of the systems, we base it off a minimum wage.
I got you. So once the income withholding order is created by the court, I have a note that there's a journal entry created. Is that what leads to enforcement?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. After we've had the hearing and the judge agrees and says, yes, this is the amount we agree. I think imputed it's like 208, 207, 208 a month, I think is what child support ends up being. If they're imputed, which imputed means using the minimum wage, Chandra was discussing of $1,257 a month. So then after on the docket for the hearing, the judge says, yes, I agree to it. We receive the order back from the court that's been filed, and we have to enter that into the system. What is that? Once that's been entered into the system, we create the income withholding order, and then we send it on, flip it to enforcement.
I got you. So, Jen, I know you deal specifically with interstate and intergovernmental cases. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how it differs from Chandra? And then if you want to also answer the question I gave to Chandra, what is a typical day in your workday looks like?
Okay. Yes, ours do differ quite a bit. Chandra was talking about the locate process. She doesn't have to have a locate process necessarily to start the petition. Mm-hmm. To get that filed with the court or send it to the attorney for review. I, on the other hand, have to have a good address within 90 days. So I have a lot of cases that are in the locate process because we don't have a locate yet. We can't do a petition. So once I do have a locate and a good address, then I start my petition, which is very different. My petition, instead of being printed out, it's called the UFSA packet. So we have the general testimony, which is like 10 pages, a USP, which is a uniform support petition, which is the petition part. There's lots of information in the packet. We have to have postal address, like I said, within 90 days. The UFSA packet also includes the birth certificates of the children. It includes the postmaster letter, like I said. All of that has to be sent to the CP, the custodial parent, once we have a good locate. That's due within 2 weeks. They have a certain amount of time that they have to send that back to me. It is a very lengthy process. It entails a lot of financial information and including, you know, how much do you get for TANF? How much do you get for childcare? That type of thing. When I receive that back and I then send that to the other state. If the custodial parent is here in Kansas, that's when I send it to the other state. So that's where ours differs is also I have incoming UFSA or incoming interstate, which is the CP is in another state. The NCP is here in Kansas. They've been located here in Sedgwick County. That comes into me, which we have a lot of referrals for intergovernmental right now. Those papers are sent to me and I start the process of getting the petition ready. Filling all the information out correctly on the system. And once I have look over and everything's in the packet that I need, which a lot of times it's not, I have to send it back if it's not ready. So if it's ready, that's when I file it with the court. And it's the same process as with Chandra. I do have a few foster cases, which foster cases are very different. If the child is in foster care, there is a case against the mother and there is a case against the father for each child. So if two parents have five children together, all five children are going to be on the same case and they're going to have one for the father and one for the mother. And yes, they do have to each pay child support if they're working in the state of Kansas. I believe we don't do zero child support here in Sedgwick County. I believe the minimum for foster care is like $25 a month. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, and I do have a couple of those cases, even though we do have somebody specifically on foster care. Of course, I get those cases if they're intergovernmental. The difference with foster care also is CINC court, which is child in need of care court. So that is different than working with our normal
Sedgwick County
courthouse. Yes. I also assist with Shawnee County. That is where we have, Topeka is our state capital. So we do have a large caseload in Topeka as well. We have, let's see, four or five counties, Maximus does here in Kansas, Wyandotte, Sedgwick, Johnson, Shawnee,
Butler.
We don't have Butler.
We don't have Butler.
I don't know. We have a lot. But anyways, my typical day, I converse a lot with the states. So usually we have what's called a CESNET, which is C-S-E-N-E-T. Basically, those are instances where in our system, I can talk to other caseworkers in foreign jurisdictions. So I spend a lot of time, obviously, conversing, asking for things if needed. But from the UFSA packet, it hasn't been completely filled out. They have a certain amount of days. Sometimes if the CP is here, we are the initiating state. If the CP is in another state or sometimes country, that would be incoming to us. I would be the responding state. So there is a lot. So thankfully now we can use our emails as well to contact. We also have different paperwork that we can actually mail to the other states if we're not getting the information we need in a timely process.
So just to switch topics just a little bit, we're going to talk about some changes that were made during the pandemic and possibly some of the changes that are sticking around after the pandemic. So I know on our project, we're responsible for receiving new hire reporting forms, which in our state is the way that we automatically generate a child support withholding order. And we also receive termination documents, which is a way for employers themselves to stop an income withholding order for a non-custodial parent that they employed. So our project has a mailroom staff who receives these documents. They open, they sort, and they scan them for our two data entry teams. And since our data entry operators were all kind of consolidated all in one area on the floor, which you can imagine is not great at the start of a pandemic, we kind of quickly moved to get all of our data entry operators, our customer service representatives, our employer liaison, our electronic file processors. We kind of got them moved out of the office and working remotely. And our mailroom staff actually can't work remotely because they receive like large amounts of mail and the printers are huge. So they had to stay on site. So what we did was our company implemented a number of different security measures, and I'm sure you guys are familiar with this. We deal with very confidential information. So we had a number of security measures put in place on work laptops so that we could then take those machines home and do most of our work remotely, which left less than five people on site at the start of the pandemic. Since that actually managed to work for our client, we are actually keeping all of our data entry operators, customer service reps, and all of that remote. And we've just kind of changed the way that we actually train them. Will you guys talk a little bit about some of the changes that your project and your office made at the start of the pandemic? And then after that, we'll kind of discuss some of the things that are staying around.
I think the one big thing is huge is the texting app that we have where we can send and receive information. Obviously, the Zoom, the court by Zoom is another one, especially with me. You know, our CPs or NCPs can't always go to the other state where they have court. So the Zoom meetings are very important. And yeah, those are sticking around. I don't think those are going anywhere. Like you talked about, our lab techs coming in twice a week, so that we can have, you know, CPs, children, and the NCPs come in into our office instead of sending them to another site to do the testing. we do have a lot of people that work remotely currently. Chandra and I are both in the office. We both prefer to be in the office, but most of our staff here actually have the option of working from home a certain amount of days a week. Obviously, we can't take a lot of this information home, like you said, because of what we are dealing with, you know, HIPAA, things like that. So we'd have a lot fewer staff in the office.
You know, we all might be working from home again, too.
That's definitely always an option, I'm sure, for people that are able to. So you said you have lab techs coming in twice a week that do genetic testing. Can you tell me if you've heard custodial parents, non-custodial parents feel that that's a more convenient way to do this genetic testing? Do they prefer to do it at your office rather than a doctor's office? Like, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I think because for me, because I do a lot of the genetic testing, I have to set up a scheduled time for them for some. But they also know that they can just come in on those 2 days, on Tuesdays and Thursdays at any time. If they missed an appointment or, you know, it's not good to do that, but at least if you let us know, you know, hey, I missed my Monday appointment. Can I come in tomorrow and do it? So, you know, that it's kind of flexible, like, you know, that the LabCorp is actually here on those 2 days. Because any other day, if I had to schedule one where if they couldn't come in on a Tuesday or Thursday, we have the GT testing here where we have a couple here on site that can do the genetic testing for them. So that's kind of convenient.
If they don't come into your office specifically to do the genetic testing, what else would they have to do in order to get that done?
We have to enter it on the LabCorp website. That's who we go through. And, mm-hmm. you know, when I have to schedule testing in other states mm-hmm. so that we use the LabCorp site, and it helps quite a bit. But they only have a certain amount of attempts before they can come in. And if they don't come
four.
In... Yeah, they're going to be placed in non-cooperation, and people do not like that because they lose their services.
Okay, and so another thing, LaToya, on that, if an NCP doesn't come for genetic testing, and obviously, you know, hey, we're trying to find out if you are the biological father of this child, if they do not do that after the 4th attempt, they are actually in process of the default parentage, meaning they are the dad regardless.
Okay, I have to ask this question. So if someone defaults and they are deemed the custodial parent, is there any way to reverse that at that point if they've missed those genetic testing?
Nope, they will have to get an attorney on their own.
Oh, wow. Oh,
wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's the state of Kansas.
And we have that's not the right word. There's just so many rules that people don't know. We have people that sign the birth certificate, the father signed the birth certificate, and then when they come and they're served, you know, we want to get child support. No, wait a minute. No. I take it back. I'm not the child's father. If they sign that birth certificate and that child is over a year,
there's no redoing that.
No, there isn't. I'm sorry. Mm-mm. You sign the voluntary acknowledgement of parentage. You are the parent.
So it seems like both the genetic testing on your actual site and then the option to do the court hearings by Zoom will definitely be sticking around because it's convenient for you guys. That's awesome. So Chandra, you have a unique perspective about child support enforcement because you're a custodial parent yourself. Will you tell me about your experience with starting a child support withholding order and just how easy or difficult the process was for you personally?
Well, you know, this was decades ago, as my children are older, but I was a single mother, and when I had my daughter, I was still in high school, graduating high school, and so, you know, then I wasn't working full time, you know, so I was on medical assistance, so even though, and back then I didn't even know, but since I had an open program of on medical with my daughter, then that was automatically a thing for them to go after my daughter's dad for child support. So it wasn't bad because it was done. You know, I didn't have to do any paperwork or, you know, it was pretty much easy part. That was easy. To me, now that I'm playing the other role, I'm the actual caseworker, it's not an easy job. I mean, because back then I thought, well, you know, oh, this isn't a hard case, but it is, because they actually have to put in all this stuff and file it and do all this and that, you know, to actually get my case going at that time, you know, and now I'm doing it. And it's like, wow, people really, you know.
You see what goes into it.
Yeah, there's so much more that goes into actually getting a case started than what people really, yeah, think they know. Because it's not easy. And so that kind of went with both of my children. It was open program for medical. And, you know, so they would. And the only thing I thought that was weird was, even though I didn't raise child support at any time with my daughter's dad, you know, they do what's called a review every so often. And he had made more money at some point. And so it does, it can anger people that's in within their household, and things, you know, kind of get a little escalated at times. You know, when you're blamed and there's a child involved, you have to be the bigger person and let it roll off sometimes. There's a big difference of being on both sides of knowing now, you know, because I did play that role as that person getting the child support, and it was always direct, you know, it was automatically taken out of his check. So I didn't have to worry about if I was getting paid. Only with my son's dad, he was one of these that ditched the bullet every once in a while. I don't need to pay her $184 a month. I'm going to quit this job. I'm going to go work at a store or something and make less money. You know, he was one that ditched the bullet, but his parents would help with that. So I was kind of blessed in that way, because there's so many out there that don't have that support, you know?
Yeah. After working in the child support enforcement field, is there anything that you would change about the process?
Man.
Yeah, that's a long question.
I just...
There is. We see a lot of men come and go. I think it's harder for men because the state of Kansas, I'm not going to lie, the state of Kansas is a very mother-oriented state, even still in 2022. I know, like I said, it is hard for men in this field to understand. We see things that anger or upset us that we know isn't right. We see child support, very high amounts, because they vary quite a ways. You know, one thing I was going to say when talking about the intergovernmental is Kansas does not do that, but a lot of states do charge interest on child support. So we have a lot of NCPs that owe thousands and thousands of dollars, and they're never going to pay that off.
Oh, that's crazy, because I was looking at one of Jen's cases today and I was like, he really owes $27,000 in child support. Well, it's interest build up on that as well, but Kansas does not. So it's kind of, you know, it's crazy. So this is a debt that they are getting charged interest on something they didn't, you know, buy, you know, so it's not, it's crazy. It's insane but Kansas does not charge interest.
I honestly think that the enforcement and the interest conversation would make an entire whole other podcast.
Yes. Oh, man.
But I'm going to wrap this one up. Thank you both for joining me today and providing so much insight into the process of child support enforcement from the point of view of caseworkers. For NCIA On Location, this has been Latoya Southall, Supervisor for the Texas Data Management Services Program with Maximus, and our guests, Chandra Lewis and Jennifer Stinnett, both from our Department of Children and Family Services Program in Kansas, working with Maximus as well. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On Location is available on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and anywhere you get your podcasts. We have a lot of great episodes on the way, so be sure to subscribe and listen to all of our previous episodes as well. We also appreciate your ratings, your feedback, your comments, and your suggestions. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, please reach out to us on the contact link on our website. On Location is a production of the NCA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. Thanks again for joining me. I'm Tim Leitner, and this has been On Location.